Creative Control with Vish Khanna.
On this episode, comedian Tom McCaffrey from New York City is on the show to talk about his new film, which is a mockumentary-documentary thing called Adventures in Comedy. It's about the art and struggle of being a stand-up comedian. And as I say, there's a film coming out this week. There's also a stand-up album that Tom recorded and, surprisingly, a hip-hop record as well. You'll learn a lot, I think, about Tom and comedy and maybe even rap music on this episode. So here it is, myself and Tom McCaffrey. This episode is brought to you by Pizza Trocadero, the finest pizzeria in all of Guelph, Ontario. They've got delicious gourmet pizzas, or choose from an array of fresh ingredients and make whatever you like. Calzones, wings, panzerotti, salads, breadsticks, garlic bread. Pizza Trocadero has it all. You can find them at 7 Municipal Street in Guelph or visit them online at trocaderoguelph.ca. That's TrocaderoGuelph.ca. Call them at 519-829-2444 for pickup or delivery. That's Pizza Trocadero, a place of the good trade.
TNC back, bitches. Yeah, less money, more problems. I'm about to start rapping. Yeah, ain't paying my cable bill in 15 months. The ATM says I have insufficient funds. My money problems are really stressing me out. Day and night, yeah, it's all that I think about. I look for money in the cushions of my couch. Me and Bill Gates ain't got nothing in common. To save money, I'm eating my top ramen. Got less possessions than the Dalai Lama. I'm more broke than Jenna Jameson's hymen. Got no checks coming in and my life is hell. I'm handing out IOUs at fucking Taco Bell. Got no cash and things are going fucking awry. Every night I pray that my rich uncle will die.
What?
Went to a hooker who looked like Robert De Niro. She wanted 30 bucks for sex, I was like, how about zero? Was stealing internet from my neighbor Bjorn. He moved, now I can't look at online porn.
Boo.
No more porn, I jerk off to glamour. Going bankrupt faster than MC Hammer. Used to steal from Target, but now they're on to me. Puffing so much weed, I should move to the Honda Lee. Losing mad sleep due to this fucked up economy.
Got my mind on my money and my money on my mind.
At the club, my credit card gets declined.
Got my mind on my money and my money on my mind.
So poor can't even afford to spend time.
Got my mind on my money and
yeah,
my money on my
verse,
mind.
Second verse, it only gets worse. Listen up, bitches, I'm about to start rapping again. Yeah.
Tom McCaffrey is a renowned comedian, writer, director, and performer based in New York City. Over the last two decades, McCaffrey's work has appeared on Comedy Central, VH1, Funny or Die, and he's written for The Onion and Huffington Post, among others. He's acted and directed in films as well, and his latest venture is a documentary about his life and work called Adventures in Comedy, which features insights from Jim Gaffigan, Janine Garofalo, Aisha Tyler, and Michael Che, among others. Adventures in Comedy will be available on most streaming sites beginning February 20th via Comedy Dynamics. And here to discuss it further is Tom McCaffrey. Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm good. How you doing?
I'm well. I'm well. Where are you, Tom?
I'm at home right now. I'm just in Manhattan. I live on the Lower East Side.
Oh. How are things? Yeah. How are things on the Lower East Side?
They're pretty sweet. It's fine. It's freezing here now all the time. There's like snow and ice just kind of all over the ground.
You guys had that thing where you were preparing for like that Snowmageddon recently and then it didn't happen.
Yeah, well, that was about a week and a half ago, I guess, last week. And then it snowed again. It snowed a couple more times this week, worse than they said it was going to the other time. But this happens in New York all the time where it'll snow, but because it stays so cold, there's snow everywhere just for like 2 months.
Yeah, yeah, it doesn't go anywhere.
That's how it is then.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just won't melt. That's basically it.
You're a New Yorker. You're a New Yorker, though. Are you used to this by now?
Yeah, I am. I grew up here. I grew up in Manhattan, so I'm used to it, but I'm like very sick of it. It's like Well, you know, my relationship with the snow has changed a lot since I was a kid. Like, when you're a kid, you, like, are happy when it snows. But when you're an adult, it, like, really bums you out.
Yeah, we had a snow day here. I work at the university in Guelph, where I'm calling you from, and there was a snow day on Monday. So there was no, we couldn't go there. So it was, you know, a snow day, just like when you're a kid. But I have two children now and a wife and a house. So my snow day was just shoveling snow. It wasn't fun at all.
Yes, I don't really have snow days now. I don't like have. I still have to like do things. You know, it's not. And actually, I don't have to tell you about snow, right? I mean, where you are, it's probably like how is it there?
It's bad. It's kind of what you're describing. Just like mountains and mountains of snow have fallen, and we're all trying to deal with it as best we can. And you know, it's rough.
Yeah, poor us.
things could certainly be worse. It's true. It's just a lot of snow. Yeah.
And I know. Yeah. It's all like, I'm looking at it out my window. A lot of it is like, has turned like black, and it's just like piles of ice, you know, so it's not even like fun snow. Like no one can enjoy it. It's like kids can't even enjoy it anymore. It's just hard and like gross. It just looks horrible. Now, whenever I cross the street, I have to like climb a mountain of ice, you know, to get across the street. It just makes everything a chore now. And, you know, New York's not like easy to begin with. So.
Yeah. How are things in New York? We've been following what's been going on with your mayor, Bill de Blasio, and the police force, and the tension was really high a couple of months ago. Has that subsided? Has the snow cooled that in any way, or are things still feeling weird?
I don't know. That whole thing, yeah, I just feel like, I know what happened. I've been following it just on the news, but it's such a thing that the only time I really hear about it is on the news. So I don't really experience it like just walking outside. Like I never really interact with the police. So like, I guess for a little bit, there was some tension. Well, there was, you know, for a while there were like all these protests going on like every night, where like hundreds and hundreds of people would take over like an entire avenue and just be walking. That's subsided. That doesn't really happen.
Right.
At least not as much anymore. But I don't know. Then there was a thing that the police were refusing, you know, to like, as a backlash to de Blasio, they were like refusing to, they said they weren't going to arrest as many people.
Right.
Which is weird. But I haven't noticed anything up from that. I mean, you would think maybe you would notice more people being able to like rob you and stuff, but I haven't.
Right.
That's just the thing. It's still around, but I only see it on the news every day. I'm like, wow, that's horrible. And then like I go outside and there's just snow everywhere.
Yeah, that whole we're not going to do our jobs thing was weird, because everyone kind of felt like they were shooting themselves in the foot. But in terms of like talking about how, you know, what kind of efficacy they actually have in the city, but you're saying from your perspective, there were no spikes in crime. People are like, all right, just that's fine. Was that what it was like?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's a thing that has like doesn't really affect me at all. Like, I live in like my neighborhood like never really changes, and New York is a lot safer now to begin with. So, even though I did see something, there was something in the news about they were concerned with how many shootings there had been in the last like just since the year started. So I don't know. Yeah, like I said, I grew up here, and it was so different when I was growing up. Like it was really dangerous when I was growing up here, and now it's just I just feel like you can't even find a dangerous area anymore. It's just so it's just so much money. Like so many people, it's so expensive. So the only thing, I just see stories every now and then about how the police really hate him and he won't like apologize to the police, which I don't understand. It's just weird. A lot of people hate de Blasio, I guess. I don't mind him that much, but people really are against him.
Yeah, I thought people, I don't know. I don't know enough about what's going on politically, but I mean, you know, you judge people like that by their character and how they present themselves, I guess, when you're not living in the city, you know, like that's all you kind of have. I'm not mired in the day to day, like what's he doing policy wise, but he seems like a nice enough guy. He seems like he knows what he's doing. And I'm a little shocked by this reaction to him.
Yeah, I don't know. I actually don't know a lot about his policies. I know that he made the comment about his son, and that's what sparked everything. He made a comment about his son and the police, and that's what got the police so angry. What was that, a couple of months ago when that whole thing was going on, when, like, right after Ferguson and with that guy, Eric Garner, who got killed, like, when they didn't indict the police that killed Eric Garner. That was, like, you could feel a lot of tension in the city. Like I was walking down the street, and there was some white guy in front of me, and he just started, like, yelling at a cop, you know, across the street. Which is kind of like, you know, when the white people are mad at the police, like, you know, it's gotten, it was some hipster guy, and it was just, but that's the worst thing I ever saw. And it wasn't even a big deal. It was just like, oh, you jerks or something like that.
Right.
So,
All right. Well, but, I don't know. I don't know if this tension provides fodder for your work as a comedian, but I'm sure it must.
I think I came up with one joke about that whole thing, because there was a lot of that going on where these police officers would like kill someone accidentally, and they wouldn't indict them, and not only wouldn't they indict them, but they wouldn't even lose their job, you know. And so I was saying, like, I understand maybe if you don't want to indict them, but I feel like if I worked at McDonald's and I accidentally killed someone, like, I would definitely lose my job. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That seems fair.
They wouldn't just move me to like another area of the rest of it. They'd be like, yeah, this isn't working. Like, you're not good at this.
I think that's a valid point to bring up. Now, I want to talk to you about adventures in comedy, and I guess first off, it's very simply, can you talk about what inspired you to actually make this film, given the fact that you've been doing comedy for quite a long time, and this film is really about you and the art of comedy, and I assume it was spurred on by maybe where you're at with your art form at this point. Can you talk a little bit about where this the idea for this film came from?
Yeah, I should point out it's a mockumentary. So it's, it's like a fake documentary.
Right, you know, but I will say that watching it, I find that the mockery unfolds initially kind of subtly. It feels like it's going to be earnest, and then, you pretty quickly, as you encounter the first sort of staged thing, then you're like, oh, okay, wait a minute, this is all kind of a joke. But yes, okay, sorry, you're right, it is a mockumentary.
You're right, when I was kind of telling people, because there's parts of it that are documentary, like the interviews with the comedians are like genuine interviews, just kind of about their career. So I had that interspersed, just sort of, like all the mockumentary stuff is the stuff with me, because it's following me around like it's a documentary, but it's stuff I've gone through throughout my career, but you know, I didn't get those things on film when it happened. So I had to just recreate them with people I knew. But I had an idea. First I was going to do a documentary about Dave Chappelle. Mm-hmm. That was an idea I'd had. And I found very early on that was not going to be easy to do.
Do you know Dave at all, or?
No, so that's why I've met him, but I don't know him. And people were like, he's never going to do an interview with you. I was like a fan. I mean, you know, I'm a fan of his, and the thing with him is I was just always kind of like, what happened? Like, why didn't he just come back and do like a special? And I felt like he'd sort of disappeared after that whole thing.
Right.
Even though he's kind of, it's funny because now he's sort of reemerging a lot more. Mm-hmm. So I was just like, well, I don't want to like spend years trying to get an interview with him and not getting one. So then the people I was shooting this with were like, oh, you should do just like a documentary about stand-up. And I was like, well, that's sort of been done, so why should I just do that again, you know? And so one of my favorite movies is This is Spinal Tap. So I just had the idea to do kind of like a This is Spinal Tap of stand-up comedy.
Right.
And so I just wrote a script pretty quickly, actually, because like I just sort of wrote down all the things that the marks I wanted to hit, like things that had happened to me throughout my career, and I hadn't been doing a lot of stand up at the time when I was doing this show, and I was kind of trying to get back into it a lot more, so I was kind of like at the perfect way to kind of just maybe illustrate me, like I've been out of the game a little bit and I'm trying to get back in, and it's not going well. And then I came up with the idea of the whole thing is leading up to me recording an album, because that kind of gave it like an arc and some tension, you know, like it was moving into one place, and everyone was kind of like, well, what's going to happen at the end? Like, what's the climax going to be?
Right, right.
And I'm very, very in the movies. Like that was always kind of I studied film in college, and, it was something I always wanted to do, and I was doing some short film. Like, I did some, like, you know, videos, like comedy videos for, like, Comedy Central that I directed and stuff, and then I was doing some short films kind of to get my feet wet, and then I just was kind of like, well, I have to just make a movie now. And this was a good way to do it because I didn't have a lot of money, but making it, like, kind of a documentary style gave me leeway for it to look kind of, you know, I could get away with it looking kind of low budget, you know what I mean?
Yeah, so, it has a rawness that documentaries often have, but I thought it looked quite, I think it looks quite good. I mean, it doesn't look, let's be fair here, Tom, it doesn't look crappy. It looks great.
Yeah, no, I think it looks good, but I felt like I could get away, like, it obviously was going to be low budget, so... You know, sometimes you see a movie that's obviously low budget, but they're trying to act like it's not low budget. So with the documentary, I feel like you can get away with that a lot more. So it kind of just, it was, you know, I had been thinking about doing a full length feature for like a year and a half. And I was like, well, how am I going to do it? When I had another idea and I was like, well, I don't think I should do that. It's going to be hard. And then like this kind of came together perfectly. And when I thought of it, doing it like the mockumentary, I was kind of like, oh yeah, like of course this would be like, because a lot of documentaries will follow one specific person, you know, when it's talking about like a field or something, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like whatever
yeah.
the field is, but follow someone having a hard time. And I was like, well, I mean, why not make me in it and just but make it? And that was the other thing, I'd never really seen a documentary about stand-up comedy that was like that funny, you know what I mean? They had funny parts, but they're more just kind of about being informative. So I was like, oh, I want to make like kind of a documentary that is also like almost like a full out comedy and has like really funny parts in it. So,
I mean, I feel like the main, well, not the main one, the documentary that comes to mind immediately is Seinfeld's Comedian, which kind of hits some of these same marks. But then at the same time, and it didn't really occur to me as I was watching it, your film, Adventures in Comedy, but as you're describing this idea of doing sort of a comeback film in terms of you recording an album and getting ready and preparing for it and then interspersing it with sort of weird things, I kind of am drawn to this idea of, well, is it anything, was the original Curb Your Enthusiasm special an influence on you at all in this? Because that's kind of a similar thing. Larry David, he didn't know he was going to make a show out of it. He just created this. Have you seen this thing I'm talking about?
Yeah, I have. And I thought of that later because, I mean, one thing I was thinking when I was making it is I wanted it to have that, like, that style, like the Larry David Curb Your Enthusiasm-ish style of, yeah, because that seems like, I mean, I don't know if the original one is it like a mockumentary, like full on where they're like, oh, we're following him, but I have seen it. I thought about it later, but yeah, it is kind of similar to that where he's kind of like because yeah, he's getting ready to do a special, right? Like he's kind of going to come back into stand up.
That's right, and there's all these, you know, similar to what the show became. It's all pretty stylized and fake. Like I think at the time he was going to, the plan was to come back to stand up, but I think he framed it as like, well, I don't want to do a documentary about that. What if we make it sort of staged? So there's, you know, weird meetings with weird meetings with executives about the special and weird encounters with other comedians. And on some level, I think there's a bit of that in what you've done as well. Like you say you're So you say you're recreating things that actually happened in your life. I mean, did you actually do a stand-up show in front of two or three dudes in their apartment?
I did an apartment show once, and there were maybe like 20 people there.
Oh, okay.
So that one is, but I've met like, I mean, but I've had shows that bad, like recently even with like five people at the show, and the guys who, you know, I've done a bunch of shows where like I've met the guys whose show it is, and they're really weird and like annoying and won't stop talking to me about their comedy careers that are just like pathetic. But you know, it's just, you meet a lot of, you know, I don't know, you meet a lot of weirdos who just want to talk shop about comedy all the time, and you're just like, I don't want to hear about you doing a show next week in Staten Island. You know what I mean? Like, that's not something to be bragging about. So,
and you've also got you've got the archetype of the sort of useless manager guy.
Yes, that one came out really funny because that was one that I was really having a hard time casting. I didn't know who to cast because I wanted to have, like, I wanted my manager to be someone who, like, was just very inept and never gotten anything done. And I finally asked my son, you know, Barry Rothbard, who I've known for years, who is, like, now doing a lot of stuff. And he's a really good actor. Like, he's been in movies and stuff. And he came in and he just like knew, I mean, he kind of like took that character and like made it his own. Like there were things that I didn't even like tell him to do. And he was like, when I told him, he was like, I know exactly like what kind of guy you want me to be. You know, it's just funny to me that the manager that's like talks really slick and has all the answers. He has an answer for everything, but they're all like, the answers don't make any sense. And he kind of owns his ignorance, like he'll be completely wrong, but because he's so confident about it, he kind of convinces you that he's right, and he doesn't seem to know anyone, but he acts like he knows everyone.
Yeah.
So, and I've just like met so many people in the industry like that, where they're like, I'm going to do, you know, they promise everything. I'm going to do that. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this. And then like, they don't do anything. And you're like, well, okay, what happened to all those things? Oh, I couldn't do it. So,
what do you suppose? What do you suppose compels people to do that? Why do they act like they can do a thing? Is it a hero complex? Like, why would they do that to you?
I think it's just a business of you know, the way you're perceived. They want, you know, it's kind of like present yourself in a successful manner, and people will think you're successful, and they. I don't know, because that's always what I ask, because I'm like, well, I mean, if you couldn't do these things, I was going to find that out eventually. So I just think no one wants to tell the no one wants to disappoint you to your face. You know what I mean? Everyone wants to feel like, everyone wants you to think that they have all the answers and they're, you know, connected in with the right people. And, you know, maybe they believe they can do these things, and maybe they try and it doesn't work out. And
yeah.
I also like the idea that he was a manager, but like barely a manager. Like he didn't even, it's not even his office. It's like a law firm office.
Yeah.
No, far away.
It's a funny concept for sure. Then you mentioned that, or we've talked about the fact that it is partially a mockumentary. There's partially these earnest segments. These segments featuring, as I mentioned, people like Jim Gaffigan and Janine Garofalo talking very seriously about what it's like to be a comedian. I'm curious, what were the interview subjects told about this film when you began speaking to them?
Well, it's funny because when I interviewed, Janine Garofalo was the first one I interviewed, and that's when I was trying to do the Dave Chappelle idea. And when I told her about it, like, she didn't like that. She didn't like that idea. She was just like kind of against it.
Sorry. Which idea? She was against which idea?
The Dave Chappelle. When I was going to do like a thing about Dave Chappelle, so it's what happened was she didn't like that idea. And so when I interviewed her, I didn't really ask her about Dave Chappelle. I just more asked her about her stand-up experience and what her life. And she was very, like, open and honest about, like, her career, because she was very kind of like, oh, you know, it's been hard for me. And, you know, kind of talking about how at one point she was, you know, hugely successful, and then one day she kind of wasn't, and she was, like, not happy about it.
Yeah.
And it's funny because when I watched the interview, I was like, wow, there's a lot of, like, really cool stuff about that. And so that kind of, it did kind of inspire me to be like, well, it'd be more interesting if, like, you were following someone kind of going through that, too. And so I was like, well, why don't I use a lot of her footage talking about her career and kind of to parallel what I went through on a much smaller level. But it's kind of like what I'm going through, where, like, there was a time I was doing well, and then, like, I went away, and now I'm coming back, and people are just kind of, no one really, it's hard for me. Like, it's not how it was anymore. And Gaffigan, I told that I was just doing a documentary about stand-up. And at that point, I was kind of doing a documentary about stand-up. I hadn't written the mockumentary part. So he was like, he was really cool about it. He was just like, yeah. And then Margaret Cho, I interviewed her really briefly, and I told her what the concept was, and she was just like, fine.
I'm curious because it is an interesting and dynamic structure to have you oscillate between these serious people, like these comedians pondering their lives and their work, and then you kind of exemplifying that with these staged aspects. I mean, I just wonder what they made of that.
There was a couple that I told, and they were fine. They were just like, I mean, I don't know that they fully understood it. Like, I did explain, like, Michael Che, I explained it to, and I mean, Michael Che was just like, okay, like, just what do you want to ask me? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't think they.
But yeah, that's kind of like when I made it, I sort of was like, because, like, you know, there's barely any footage of me doing stand up in it, because I didn't want it to be, I wanted it to be about stand-up, but I wanted it to kind of be more just about, like, the entertainment industry and more just, like, I felt like making a movie that anyone could relate to about kind of, like, having adversity while trying to, like, follow a passion they have or, like, a dream that they have. And I guess you're right. Like, it's a mockumentary, but it is more Larry David-ish because there's a lot more, it's based on me, and all the stuff about me is, like, true. Like, all the stuff I talk about in my life. So it's fake with me, but it's also kind of real because it's not like a made up character. So,
and not necessarily, I mean, they're heightened, but these incidents that you document, the staged parts of it are drawn from things that actually happened to you. They're maybe exaggerated, but they're things that actually happen.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Like, which I think Curb Your Enthusiasm, that's kind of what he mastered, you know, like, these are things that happen to him. And it's funny because, I'm very influenced by him in that show. And I mean, a lot of people are, I'm sure, but people have told me that I remind them of him.
Right.
Just because I, like, I'll get in situations all the time, like, about these stupid things, and people are like, just let it go.
I think it's pretty, I feel like there's a lot of, I've heard these stories a lot. I think people are seeing Larry David and people they know, and I don't know what that says about the people they know. Because you get it, I get it, some of us get it. You know, you're a lot like Larry David. Like, you tell a story about some weird thing you've encountered or interaction you've had, and it's funny that he's become this hallmark of awkwardness or whatever.
Right. Well, there has to be, like, it has to be universal to some extent, because, it was, a lot of people can relate to it. I feel like if no one could relate to it in any way, then it wouldn't have taken off like it has, because, obviously he's the king of that, just taking the mundane little things of everyday life and turning them into these, like, I don't know, funny stories.
Yeah, yeah. Well, from my perspective, and I think it's not an uncommon perspective, I don't think stand-up or comedy has ever been as... It doesn't... I mean, I can't speak to this. I am not a time traveler, but it doesn't feel like it's ever been as pervasive as it is right now. And I don't just mean that there are more venues and outlets for stand-up and comedic venues, like people making videos or whatever. I feel like there's more people talking about comedy, more people talking about the practice of comedy than I've ever encountered. And I don't know, and you're doing it now. I mean, in this documentary, it's another offshoot of this moment in time where comedians are talking about themselves and why they do what they do. And more people are into comedy as well. Like, more people are consuming comedy every day. Do you have a sense?
Really?
Yeah, I think so. You don't think so?
That's actually something I've like been really wondering about. Just in terms of stand up. I mean, yeah. Like, I was wondering even when I started making this about 2 years ago. I was like, well, where is stand up right now? Like, is it like a stand-up boom, or is it like, I don't know, is it a weird wave now, or it's,
I think it's,
you know, everything ebbs and flows.
Yeah, I think you're right, but I do think that, I mean, I think it's telling that over the last, particularly the last decade, more arts festivals are incorporating stand-up, like music festivals and whatnot, are like, we have to have a comedy stage, like there has to be comedy programming. Stand-up program.
Yeah, yeah.
There's more, you know, with Funny or Die, or, you know, even during the I guess it wasn't really the healthcare debate, but with the launch of the website, to have the President of the United States use, you know, Between Two Ferns as an outlet.
Right, right. Yeah, that's one thing I will say is, like, something going on, because, like, you'll see all these huge celebrities involved in, like, comedy videos, like, kind of like mocking some iconic thing that they did. You know, it's like really serious act. Like, it seems like these really big, like, just serious actors are willing to do comedic things now.
Yeah, and that's and what I know that's not stand up per se, but I think I'm bundling it all up in this realm of why is comedy so appealing to everyone? It seems to be more appealing than it's ever been.
Yeah, I think it might just be the reach is, like, there's a lot more outlets and it's a lot easier to reach people, and people are doing different, because I, like, stand-up itself, I don't know how popular it is. I know it is popular. I feel like a lot of the popularity are, like, offshoots of, like, stand-ups doing other things. That's kind of why, like, I was, like, trying to do... Like, I always wanted to do films eventually because that was what I was interested in, even though I did stand-up. But so that's what I was trying to move into, because it seemed like with that, you have, like, a bigger reach. Because even, like, successful stand-ups are, like, they're known for, like, other things made them famous, you know? Like, they did, like, a TV show or, like, a movie or something, so... And then people are like, oh, they're a stand-up? Oh, all right. And then they have a huge following as a stand-up. But
right. But I hear what you're saying, but you also come across people who do seem to have, I don't want to use the word transcend because I think it belittles the art of stand-up, but you do end up seeing people like Louis C.K., Patton Oswalt, Jerry Seinfeld, Jay Leno, who people are always mystified that they're still on the road so much. They kind of assume that they have a certain amount of success. Why are you going on the road? Chris Rock, whoever. And I think a lot of those guys will have said, you know, this was not, I didn't view this as some shitty stepping stone. This is what I wanted to do. In fact, all the other stuff is a way to parlay a more successful stand-up career.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Which I feel like a lot of, like Aziz Ansari is like, you know, huge now, and like mainly from his, you know, other things, but you know, he uses it now, he as like, he's still a stand, and now everyone knows he's a stand-up and he can has this huge following, and then, you know, it's always like the really great comedians that are still on the, you know what I mean, like I talk about a little bit in the movie, Jim Gaffigan makes some comment about how like stand-ups no matter what, like, have to do it. And
yeah,
like,
yeah.
When Seinfeld went back, it was like well, of course he's going back. Like, he has to do stand-up. It has nothing to do with, like, Jay Leno. I mean, it has nothing to do with money for him. You know what I mean? He has so much money. It's just clearly that's what he, like, loves to do.
And I
get that because, like, if you get to that point where you have people that know you and, like, you can go into a room and they're kind of, like, going to be with you, you know what I mean? It makes stand-up a lot more enjoyable, yeah. Instead of going in and being like, oh, like, they don't know who you are, you have to win them over. It's probably hard, too, cause if they're famous, because the bar is set so high for them. But, yeah, I guess there's a stand-up, but I just feel like, I guess the thing I thought, or the conclusion I came to was, like, it must just be with the internet and everything, there's just so much more of a reach, you know, there's so much more out there for people to consume.
Yeah, I think that is ultimately, it's probably the subtext of my question, like, why has the internet been so instrumental in making comedy as pervasive as it is? I mean, it's probably fairly self-evident on some level, but as a comedian, like, I don't know, like, do you do much internet stuff, per se?
I do internet stuff, but a lot of it's like, for a while I was doing like comedy videos. And I also did like a rap album like 4 years ago, like a comedic rap album. And I did a bunch of videos for that, and like Comedy Central like played some of them. And that was where I kind of, when I started to get into the internet, it was more for like things like that. And right. That's why when I was making this movie, my whole idea was like how because now movies are like going online, you know what I mean? Like TV and movies are like kind of moving into that direction and distribution. So, I was kind of like, oh, this is perfect to do like a low budget comedy movie. And then, it could just live online. I don't even have to worry about, you know, getting into theaters or something. Cause I never was like, oh, this will be in theater. You know what I mean? Cause I feel like the huge movies are made and don't even go into theaters at this point.
Yeah.
Can I mention, I also have, cause I'm with the movie, I'm releasing a stand-up album, called Adventures in Comedy.
It's the actual end result of the film. Like that I didn't realize.
Well,
in the film, we don't really see you recording your, it becomes the saga of whether you're even going to want to record your album. And then we get a glimpse that you might be recording it, but we don't.
Yeah.
We know that it debuted at number 434 on iTunes. That's all we are left to know.
Right.
Steven Spielberg was a big, like, you end up doing quite well because of it, actually.
Yes. So everything works out. Everything works out realistically at the end. But I recorded the album like a month and a half ago, and it was kind of perfect because the company New Wave was like, well, yeah, we want to release the album and call it the same title, so it'll be, this is the album that that the movie leads up to. Mm-hmm. You don't see any of it in the movie, but and then I'm also releasing a rap album through New Wave on the same day, like a comedy. Like, I rap too, as a, you know, it's supposed to be funny.
Yes, there's at the end of the film, there's a great video of you rapping, and
right.
It's a nice black and white video, and it's a good song. And I don't know if I want to say it's a good song. I'm a big rap and hip hop fan. Are you insulted if I suggest that it may not be the best hip hop or rap song?
That's fine. I mean, you know, it's always nice to hear that.
You are a little insulted.
No, it's fine. It's fine. I think it's pretty good. I mean, I'm a pretty good rapper. I'm not the greatest.
You're good. You are a good rapper. Don't get me wrong. I can't tell in the context of at the end of the film where I'm just like, what the hell was that? Because I was left feeling like, what the hell was this film? I thought it was a sweet, earnest film about a kid that, you know, was on the Oscars when he was 10 years old, dancing, and then got into the showbiz and comedy. And then as it unfolded, I was like, what the hell? Wait a second, this is all fake or something. But wait, that's Jim Gaffigan speaking very sincerely. What is going on? And then at the end, there's this weird rap video, and I didn't know what to make of anything.
Right. Well, you know, I thought, you know, just put a lot of, throw a lot of people, and kind of, I like when audiences are sort of like, like, what's this? Oh my God. Because, you know, like, I love how Slumdog Millionaire kind of ends with like a dance number.
Right, right.
Have you seen that?
Yes,
which
I
is kind of, I mean, I love that movie. It's just like, wait, there's like a dance number at like the end of, or even at the end of like 40-year-old Burton, they have like a whole like 5-minute dance routine after he finally loses his virginity. And it's like, that was weird.
I guess Bridesmaids does the thing at the end with the Wilson Phillips song as well.
Yeah, that one's a little more like integral, I guess.
That's part of the movie. Yeah, right, right.
Yeah, but though, I mean, yeah, don't get me wrong. I know it's, but I was doing it, putting it in. I was like, this is a little weird. But
there's just no context for it. It just, there's like a rap song starts up. And
the only context is that I'm going to be putting out a rap album and maybe people will like look up that I rap too and be like, oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
no, it's, believe me, it doesn't happen. But it's at the way end, so I feel like it's like after the credits. So it's like if you're on board, it's kind of like maybe an extra bonus thing that you might be like, oh, wait, it's not over? Like,
well,
what is this?
And it's sort of appropriate given the kind of hangdog, like this is not really a success story film, and then you've got this rap song that isn't really about normal rap and hip hop tropes. Yeah, it's like about not having money. So it totally makes sense, I suppose. It's just, it's great. It sounds like you're a one man guy. You yourself seem to have many outlets for your comedy, which is good.
Yeah, when I was growing up, I wanted to be a rapper. I mean, I never really seriously entertained that, but.
Who's your favorite rapper?
Eminem is definitely my favorite rapper. I'm sort of obsessed with him. But I like other, like Nas is probably my second favorite rapper.
Pretty complex, complex guys.
Yeah, yeah. Eminem was someone that I just think he's like a genius. And I'm always just overwhelmed by his. He just is something that he kind of keeps getting better. When I was growing up, like I loved like the Beastie Boys and like Public Enemy and
That must have been crazy. You were growing up in Manhattan when a lot of that stuff was happening.
Yeah, see, that's the thing is like I was like growing up kind of like I was like 11 when Run DMC hit it really big and I loved them and then I was like 13 or 14 when the Beastie Boys hit it big and it was like, you know, they're from here and it was like it was just kind of like I wanted to be like that. I felt like that was made like specifically for me. Like I was like the target demographic for the Beastie Boys, you know, being 14 in Manhattan and being in the rap. And it was good. And then so when I was in high school, it was just kind of like rap was kind of becoming bigger and bigger. And everyone I knew, that was like our music. And and a lot of it was, you know, we'd watch videos on like Yo MTV Raps, and a lot of it was shot like, you know, near where we lived. It was just kind of like, whoa.
Yeah. That's cool. I'm a big, I tend to rap in public a lot. And I often do Without Me by Eminem.
Oh, really? Like karaoke?
Well, I actually play in a, it started out as kind of, I play music and I have played music in my life. And it started out as a thing where a bunch of us who were in real original music making bands were asked to convene to create a kind of cover band. And then it's just continued for like 10 years. And so the very first show I did Without Me, we did a medley from Billie Jean by Michael Jackson into Without Me. And it just has not stopped. We play weddings and conferences and all sorts of weird things. We just, every time we play, someone asks us to do something else. So it just never dies. The band never dies. And so I've been rapping Without Me for over 10 years in public.
Yeah. That's one of my go-tos when I do karaoke, always.
Yeah.
Without Me.
Yeah.
I always do that. I always do Lose Yourself.
Nice.
I am a big fan, but recently he's kind of, I don't know if you, like, if you're a big fan of his still, but.
No, he's fallen off a little bit. There was a cypher. I know some of the recent cyphers were very controversial, but he did one. The one he did where he talked about, unfortunately, you know, striking Lana Del Rey or whatever, but that I was so disappointed because it's some of the best exhibition of rap. Like I've never seen rapping like that in my life. I was just like, that's like the one of the best things I've ever seen him do. And unfortunately, he's still rapping like he's 13 years old.
Yeah. The problem I'm having with him now, which is making him less enjoyable, is he's becoming like this machine of rap, where he's like obsessed with getting faster and faster. So now his songs, like, I can't rap to them,
because
he's too fast. Like, he came out with a song with a bunch of other guest appearances called Detroit Versus Everybody. Like last week.
Yeah, it's great.
Did you hear that?
I did. I liked
it. It's good, but his verse, he's just like, and I'm like, I can't. And one of my things that I enjoy when I listen to rap is like getting the words and being able to like say the words with it, because I am really into the flow and rhythms of people's flow, and I like being able to figure them out. But I feel like his flow has become like inhuman. Like, I'm like, how does a human even say that? Like, that part in Rap God, I've tried to like learn, but it's so fast.
I totally know what you're saying, and I think it's a kind of selfish on both our parts, because I grew up loving the Wu-Tang Clan, but I could never really get into Raekwon and Ghostface, and I figured out years later it's because I can't figure out how to do their parts, like when I'm driving or whatever.
Right.
I mean,
yeah,
it's sort of weird that we're that's how you relate to. I guess you, on some level, you relate to music if you can sort of sing along to it, or sort of mimic it. And I just can't. Ghost and Ray, like, what I've come to realize is technically they're two of the greatest rappers of all time. Like, no one can. Like, it's really hit me. Like, the reason I don't always appreciate them is because I can't emulate them. Whereas my go-to is always like GZA, Genius is like the greatest MC of all time. But I think it's because I think the content is clear and I can get into it and I can do it. Jay-Z is kind of similar. But I know that like people like even Andre 3000, like, I can't quite do it. And that impacts my appreciation of, or like my ability to enjoy it. Is like, damn it, I can't do this.
It definitely does with me, and that's kind of what I like about Eminem, when he, because his flow was always pretty, not always, but it got to a point where it was like very fast. His flow was always going like pretty fast, but you could still like, if you learned it, like without me, there are parts where you're like, you just have to, if you learn it, it's fast, but you can do it. It's doable. And when you do it, you kind of feel like you're a badass, because you're like, oh, look, I know how to do that part.
Yeah.
But Rap God, I've literally sat and tried to do that part, and it's like, I can't do it. And I'm just like, and it kind of really frustrates me, because I want to be able to do it. And his other, like, Lose Yourself is another one where there's parts where you're just like, I've done it at karaoke, and people are like, wow, I can't believe you can do that. I'm like, I know. That is a big part of it. Me being able to rap to, even though Nas is someone I can't rap with. He has a flow that I can't get a hold on.
100%. I agree. And it does, like, I know Illmatic is incredible, and I listen to it, I'm like, this is incredible. But at the same time, I know I can rap Empire State of Mind, and I don't know if I'll ever be able to rap New York State of Mind. You know what I mean? It's just weird.
Yeah, I've been listening to New York State of Mind recently, and I can't get it. I don't know why. There's something about his, like, he's deceptive, because he is fast, but he's not fast. He's like, seems like he's kind of like, Eminem is like, you can tell he's like putting a lot into it. Nas is like, it just seems like he's not really trying that hard. I just saw there's a documentary about him called Time is Illmatic.
Yeah. I haven't seen it yet, but I've heard of it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's great. And that kind of has gotten me back into listening to him. So I've been listening to him more. So really, it's just kind of all about when he recorded Illmatic, and how people say that's like, you know, the quintessential hip-hop album.
Absolutely. But again, on some level, I've listened to it hundreds of times, but I don't know it as well as really simple Beastie Boys rhymes, or really simple whoever, like, it's comparably simple rappers. Like, it's just interesting. Anyway, this is I appreciate this tangent, but I think we've gone off track a little bit. I think in sort of closing here, we've talked about the structure of adventures in comedy. What would you hope is the takeaway from this film? Because as we've established, it's sort of quasi-educational. It's mostly meant to be very funny, but there does seem to be a message or theme to it. Can you kind of illuminate that in closing?
Yeah, I guess, you know, the theme I wanted to get across was I wanted it more instead of it just being about like the art of stand-up or like what stand-ups go through, like, you know, because a lot of documentaries I've seen where they're like, oh, stand-up's really hard and I have to do it. I mean, because there is that aspect to it, but I guess it was the theme of it is just supposed to be kind of like following your passion and your dream, like just following it through, taking it all the way and really not jumping off. Because I remember I saw an interview, because, you know, everyone's gone through that. When you go through a journey where you're really following your dream and your passion, you know, you're told when you're young and everyone's just like, you know, all things you see throughout life are like, follow your dream, just follow your passion. But it's like, yeah, it's not that easy. That, like, there are a lot of times you're on the path and, like, not everyone's, like, next to you going, hey, just keep going and follow your path. People are like, yeah. In fact, a lot of people are like, yeah, this isn't working out. Like, I don't know about this. I saw an interview with Morgan Freeman once, and he was talking about how he had some success in his early 30s, I think, and then it kind of went away, and he was, like, in his late 30s, almost 40, and he was like, well, what are you going to do? Like, is this... He's like, are you going to, like, give your life to this? Because who knows where this is going?
Yeah.
And that was kind of the sentiment that kind of always inspired me for this, is you do get to those points. Because when I first started it, I was, like, about to turn 40. And I was at a point, you know, I was like, well, what am I going to do? Like, I want to make movies. All right, make a movie. Who's going to care? So, but it was kind of like, I guess, that Morgan Freeman sentiment of, like, you know, if you're going to do this, like, you just got to go all in. Mm-hmm. And not, there's not just halfway. And, like, if you really have a dream, just fucking go for it.
So the biggest inspiration for adventures in comedy was really Morgan Freeman.
Basically. I would almost say, like, even, you know, that's why I got so into, like, Eminem. And, you know, because I loved his story of, he was one of those people, you know, he wanted to be a rapper and it wasn't working. You know, he had so many things stacked against him and he was getting older for a rapper in the rap world. I think he was like almost like 25, 26. And, before he got signed and, I just think Eminem's one of the most amazing stories because Eminem grew up with nothing. This white kid who one day decided he was going to be the biggest rapper in the world, and he should not have become that, and he became that. And I guess that's kind of the sentiment too. It's like, you never know the power of a dream. Like, you never know what you have in you. You know what I mean? Like, that's always what I always go back to, is like Eminem. I don't know, the idea of him at 15 being like, yeah, I'm going to be the biggest rapper in the world. People would be like, are you out of your mind? Like,
yeah, yeah.
How would that ever happen? And then it's like, oh my God, like that happened. I guess anything's possible.
Yeah. Well, no, I think that's true. That message does come through in the film. You mentioned, so the film is out streaming in various places on February 20th. You mentioned that there's an album as well of the same name that's coming out at some point. What else is, and maybe I can get you to specify exactly when, but also what's next for you? Do you have Canadian tour dates? Do you have other, are you going to be doing more stand-up?
Well, yeah, the stand-up album's coming out the same day, February 20th, and the rap album's coming out February 20th.
Okay.
Yeah, the trifecta.
What is the rap album called?
The rap album's called Streets Aren't Watching.
That's good. I like that. Good. Nice one.
Thanks. Yeah, no, so I came up with that like months ago and I was like, I got it. If I do another rap album, that's what it has to be called. Because I do, every rapper's always like, Streets are watching. I'm just like, no one cares about my rap career.
Streets is watching is pretty common. Yeah, that's good. I like that. Okay, so Streets are, is it aren't or are not?
Streets aren't watching. Right,
Streets aren't watching. And then in Adventures in Comedy, everything's coming out February 20th, so that's good. And then what else is going on with you?
That's a good question. I'm doing a lot more stand up here in the city. I have a bunch of like dates coming up here. There's this club, Eastville Comedy. I'm doing a bunch, and then I'm doing a show at Caroline's, and yeah, that's basically it. I have a podcast that I do every week. It's called Last Exit to Brooklyn.
Okay.
And I talk about like bad movies on it. I talk about like pop culture and bad movies because, like I said, I'm really into movies and bad movies. And yeah, that's basically, I'm just doing a bunch of dates here in the city. So,
okay.
Doing stand up.
That's cool. We hope you come up to Canada at some point.
Yeah, definitely. I've never been to Canada.
What? Come on.
Yeah. No, I've never been there. I really want to go.
All right, we got to figure this out. I know some people. Maybe I'll put a word out to somebody that I know that let's see if we can get you up here. I don't know anybody really, but I'm just saying. I'm like your manager guy. I'll hook you up. Don't worry.
You should talk to my manager. You guys have a lot to talk about.
All right. Well, so yeah. Once again, Adventures in Comedy is out via Comedy Dynamics. The film, anyway, February 20th, and then the album's coming out. You said on New Wave.
Yeah, New Wave, Comedy Dynamics is a branch of New Wave.
Right, okay.
And New Wave, their, you know, CD department, their audio department is doing the album.
Okay.
So.
And then the rap record is the same?
Yeah, the same day.
Okay, cool. All right, well, so people can look out for that. And do you have like I know you're not on Twitter, are you, Tom?
No, I'm on Twitter. Yeah, it's at Tom McCaffrey.
Okay, Tom McCaffrey on Twitter, and then that's probably the best place to follow you and figure out how to. If you have a, do you have like another web hub?
I have, a website, TomMcCaffreyComedy.com.
Oh, there you go. All right, there we go. So TomMcCaffreyComedy.com. Now, Tom, before we leave, and I don't have a copy of this yet, but I'm going to make this request of you now because normally this is primarily a music podcast / radio show. Often we leave with a song, and because you have a rap album out, do you think it's possible for me to get a copy of at least one of the songs? And if so, can you choose the song that we play for people right now?
Yeah. But do you want my the song from my last album? Because the new one isn't, like, it's still being finished.
Well, no, I'm not going to be, well, sure. Anything you want. Yeah, anything you want. I just want to play some sampling of your rap world right now.
Okay, there's a song called I'm a Headliner that's on the last one, and that might be a good one because a lot of comedians are on it. Like Hannibal Buress is on it.
Okay. All right, that sounds fine. That sounds like a good, and I mean, it speaks to your sort of confidence, your self-confidence as a rapper and a comedian.
Yeah, it's just, I got like five comedians and we each do a verse about how we're like the greatest comedian in the world, basically.
Okay, well, this is it. This is the sorry. And your hip hop name is what again?
TMC.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, that's right. This is TMC with I'm a Headliner. Tom McCaffrey, it was a pleasure to speak with you, and I wish you the best of luck with everything here.
Thank you. Thanks very much. This is great.
And also a dope rhyme, I make you laugh so hard, I give you an angina. Making more dough than director Rob Reiner. If you heckle me, I give your ass a shiner. Then diss you with a dope ass one liner. On the microphone, I kill at will. I make laughter spill because I'm ill for real. Jail, my jokes are sick like Lyme disease from a tick. And in every show, I bang the hottest chick. I'm getting more ass than Brad fucking Pitt. I'm a comedy legend like that movie Vacation. One time I got a 40-minute standing ovation, banging mad chicks of the Asian persuasion. I'm amazing, I got a lot to give because I'm the greatest comic that has ever lived.
Milk is chilling, always killing. What more can I say? Top villain, that's what I got. Got it good. And if you wanna book me, call Hollywood. My agent gets 15%. No.
no door deal, bitch, get bent. Money well spent on the rider, vaporizer, blue visor, insurance by Kaiser, so many appetizers. In the green room back in June, you asked for a plus two, then you brought your whole crew. Did you have to let them linger? By the way, who ate my chicken finger? Don't mean to be a whiner, but respect, I'm the fucking headliner.
Yeah, Townable, Chi-Town, they don't know how to close no show. I'm a headliner, closing the show. I'm the realest. Coffee shop, subway car, I'm a killer. The illest in the business, slap a Jehovah Witness. After my show, I get bitches and drink tickets. You're showing my show, you wanna know the difference? My show sold out, you pay people to listen. They sit around in grimace, questioning their decisions. You're tripping, and you need to get out of the business. Peace out, dog. Adios and good riddance.
Don't forget the reminder, I'm a headliner, and there is none finer. Murder you with my material, you know I'm seeing red. I'm more crazy than the paper boy from Better Off Dead. I'm not passive, no, I'm fucking regular, aggressive. Pimp, slap a heckler's sack, just to teach him the lesson that my setups are the bomb. Punchline be the trigger, even when I phone it in. Casualties, I deliver, I'm blowing minds. Cause dinosaurs are pooping the bed. You only set up a Jim Belushi cause his brother is dead. I'm throwing rhymes while you're blowing your dad. I'm a top shelf tab on your maxi pad, bitch.
To work at 8 in the p.m. Two other comics, but you ain't there to see them. Nah, that's me up on the marquee. I'm the headliner, the one you're paid to see at clubs, colleges, corporate events. Now I got 5,000 Facebook friends, a 16-year veteran of the best medicine. Yeah, I did Conan. Yeah, I did Letterman. I kill them. Every single night's a homicide. They roar scores on the floor when I'm inside. Light me at 40. I'll spot me a shorty for the after-show party. We'll get a little naughty. Fly sweeties line up to buy CDs. Nah, I don't mind. I'll sign your DVDs. Take a blonde hoe back to the condo. Tap it real slow. Wake up for morning radio.
I get 1,200 a week every time I freak. That means I make 3/4 of my rent to speak. That don't include travel, that's alright with me. Cause I get all the Jaeger bombs I want for free. Two connecting flights with that window seat. Ball up the jacket so that Joe can sleep. Took a cab from the airport, hope they reimburse. Early show is tonight, but try not to curse. You saw that girl staring at me, yeah, the one from the crowd. Hey, I know she was big, but she was laughing real loud. And you may choose to criticize the way I get down, but now I got a fat chick to fuck when I come to town.
Yo, the booker of this club is a fucking D-bird.
He's gonna fire me because I said the C-word. I told him it's the late show, this crowd is eager to hear some dirty shit, so don't try to beat her. My skills do I really have to tell you again? I've been on Byron Allen, Carson Daly, premium blend, bitch.
Hey, thanks again for checking out Creative Control with Vish Khanna. You can email me about the show at creativecontrol933@gmail.com. That's creative with a K, control with a K, 933@gmail.com. You can also follow our Twitter at Vish Creative, V-I-S-H-K-R-E-A-T-I-V-E. And you can also like our Facebook page. A version of this show airs on CFRU in Guelph every Wednesday at noon Eastern. And you can listen to that online at CFRU.ca, or if you're in the KW region at 93.3 FM in Guelph. You can also sign up for the weekly mailing list for the podcast and the show at vishkhanna.com, and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. I believe that is everything I wanted to tell you. Thank you once again.